Hey, I'm Antonio Grisefo, and this is the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast, number 9, Life with Mashuk, part 2. My roommate, Mashuk, asked me, Mr. Antonio, how much to marry one girl in America? We don't have a system like that in America, I told him. No, but I mean, how much? How much does it cost? How much do you pay? No, it doesn't work like that. You don't buy a wife in America. You have to date her, and she has to like you. Yes. And how much? A Pakistani friend of mine who worked in America for a number of years and was now a tutor for foreign students in Malaysia told me, when these guys go to America, they are completely socially inept because they have no idea how to communicate or interact with Western women. Back in his home village, Mashuk probably equated being in possession of many goats as being popular with the ladies. If he was flying to America and customs officials seized his goats, he'd be thinking, oh great, how can I get married? He will strike out with countless women in discos in Manhattan thinking, if I only had my goats. Yes, Mashuk, the goats would have changed everything for you. When I lived in Malaysia, I was teaching Muay Thai sparring classes 5 nights a week at a kickboxing club. I wasn't getting paid because no one ever pays me for anything I do. My martial arts teaching is the equivalent of my blogging. It cost me a lot of time and energy to develop my knowledge and skills, and I was giving it away for free because I'm an idiot. The benefit of not accepting money is absolute freedom, both in my writing and my martial arts training. And I can be as selective as I want to be. The owner of the club gave me permission to decide for myself who or how many students to train. Very magnanimous of him since he wasn't paying me. And most of the time I trained between 0 and 5 students in advanced Muay Thai. My roommates and people in my apartment complex knew that I was involved in Muay Thai training, and they all asked to train with me. So I would just take them to the school and let them sign up for normal classes, not taught by me. Mashuk asked me if he could become a student. I wasn't sure how I felt about having to spend more time with him, but I was thinking that this might be a good chance to soften my heart. If I was spending more rather than less time with my roommate, maybe I would discover a commonality by which we could become friends. When he turned up for training the first day, the trainer, Ali, asked him, where are your shorts? I do not wear, he said simply. Every day he came to training wearing some filthy baggy work pants, which we all decided were appropriate attire for milking goats, but not necessarily for training in Muay Thai. I'd like to stop here and head off any accusations of me being a racist. Ali was my friend. The Muay Thai school owner was Muslim, and he was my friend. I was in Malaysia studying Islam and Islamic martial arts. Among the friends I hung out with the most, apart from the Chinese, were the Pakistanis. I also got along with other people living in my building, Muslims from Africa, the Arab world, and South Asia. This long two-part podcast rant was not intended as an insult to anyone of any race, creed, or color, or religion. Only one individual, Mashuk. And I also like the name Mashuk because in Italian the word mamaluk means kind of like a mook, kind of like, you know, not so smart guy. So Mashuk, mamaluk, I don't know, could be Italian. Anyway, back to training. So Ali's leading the students in class. Malaysia is bloody hot, like the rest of Southeast Asia, and the gym was not air conditioned. Wearing shorts and a t-shirt, I would sweat until I thought I was going to die. So I couldn't imagine training in long pants. Every few minutes, Ali would remind the students to drink water. What water? Asked Mashuk. Water. You need to drink water during training so you don't get dehydration, Ali explained. What water? Water. Drinking water. I drink? Yes, you need to bring a bottle of water and drink it during training. Where? Here, at the Muay Thai school. Muay Thai? I would eventually figure out that at least part of the problem was that although Mashuk was studying Muay Thai, he didn't know the word Muay Thai. Later, walking home, he said to me, I like this game. What, you mean Muay Thai? He just stared at me. And my skin crawled from that creepy stare. It was just an expressionless, bearded stare. I can't describe it. It was like an impending nightmare. But on the other side of the door where you can't quite see it, but you know it's there. Muay Thai, this sport, this game, it's called Muay Thai. Do you like Muay Thai, Mashuk? Is that what you're telling me? His response was simply to continue staring at me. No yes, no, no disagreement, just that cold, emotionless stare. I made some excuse to hurry home and get away from him as quickly as I could. The whole way back to the apartment, I could feel his eyes, like laser beams, boring into the back of my skull.
few weeks later on the walk home, Mishuk said to me, "Mr. Antonio, I this, not good." I glanced at him and saw that he was making kicking motions. "Yes, your kicks have no power," I agreed. "I this," he repeated, making the same kicking motion. "Yes, your kick is no good. Yes, that is true. You don't kick well." Mr. Antonio, he commanded. Look at me. I looked. He was kicking. "Yes, your kick is no good. I know. I see you. You are kicking and it's wonderful, but it sucks." "Like this, Mr. Antonio. I look. This no good. Mr. Antonio, look. This no good." "Yes, your bloody kick is no good. I know. I don't want to look at you anymore. I saw it. You're kicking. Your kick is no good. I know. We knew it 20 minutes ago when I first said your kick is no good. Why must I continue to look at you?" I this, he repeated, making a kicking motion. I hurried home alone. If he hadn't known the word kick on the first day of school, I find that strange. But now, he was weeks into the training. They trained every day, 5 days a week, and the whole class was taught in English. How could it be that he didn't know the word kick yet? It must have come up at some point. He also didn't know the word Muay Thai. The day he was leaving, he did not know the word Muay Thai. The next morning, back at the apartment, I was online Googling to find out if it was possible to get athlete's foot so bad that your toes had to be amputated. My toes were rotting off at an alarming rate. On some of the smaller toes, there was so much tissue missing that I could see light coming through from the other side. The flesh that remained was completely white, which I learned in my paramedic training meant dead flesh, normally caused by frostbite. Once the skin turns wet, smelly, and white, it can't be revived. So now, in addition to all my other problems, I had somehow contracted frostbite in Malaysia. Actually, I knew it wasn't frostbite, but I was really worried that the rotting flesh would have to be cut off, or maybe the toes would be amputated to save the foot, like in one of those Civil War movies, where the leg gets gangrene and has to be sawed off. I kept picturing a hospital tent 150 years ago, with 5 guys holding me down while I struggle and scream and my leg is being sawed off. Anyway, the website said no matter how bad the athlete's foot gets, it's treatable with antifungal medications. Warning! Antonio Grisefo is not a medical professional. He's an EMTB paramedic 1, but his license lapsed. The medical information contained in this episode is meant only for entertainment purposes. If you're suffering from severe athlete's foot, you should report to a doctor immediately for amputation. Sorry about the little interruption to our story, but you know how lawyers are. Real sticklers indeed. I don't want to get sued for giving medical advice. So anyway, I went out and bought a bunch of medicine for my feet. Then I decided to do an extra cleaning on the bathroom floor because I figured this was one of the many places where I picked up bacteria. I stripped down to my skivvies and emptied gallons of disinfectant in the bathroom. The chemicals were burning my feet, especially in the open wounds from the athlete's foot. But on some level, I thought maybe it would help kill the fungus. I let the chemicals soak into the floor for about an hour. Then I got down on my hands and knees and began scrubbing. After a while, I heard Mishuk's bed being shoved across the floor in his room. He had this weird habit of blocking his door with his bed when he slept and then moving it in the morning. But he only moved it about 6 inches off the door, so he had to squeeze out of his room sideways. Watching Mishuk squeeze out of his door in the morning always reminded me of popping a zit. Mr. Antonio, what do you do? I do many things, I answered, but at this exact moment, I'm cleaning the bathroom. Please, I help, he said, grabbing a scrub brush. The room was very small, and I didn't want anybody else in there with me. And also, I could do it faster by myself. I got it, man, it's okay, I said.
But no good. I also dirty, want to clean.
Nah, look, Mishuk, this bathroom has been here since long before I got here. You had ample opportunity to clean it and chose not to. If you really wanted to clean it, you could clean it any other day when I'm not cleaning it. Of course, he never did. He stood there staring at me with a look of embarrassment. Of course, that embarrassment wasn't so much that he cleaned the bathroom the next time or the next. Instead, he just stood, staring and staring. Finally, I had to close and lock the bathroom door. But while I was on the floor scrubbing, I could see a shadow under the door. He didn't move until I had finished. That night at the Muay Thai gym, the students were supposed to do 50 sit-ups with a partner. One partner did sit-ups, the other partner counted. Keep in mind that Mishuk had been coming to the gym for 2 months at that point, and they had done this exercise every single night. Also keep in mind that counting is a universal skill that all humans possess, and it's independent of language. So Mashuk watched the other students because watching people is what he did best. Students were paired up, one was doing sit-ups, and the one holding his feet was counting. They counted the reps like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20. 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 30. Like that all the way up until they got to 50. So they counted to 10 five times, and that makes 50. Yeah, this is real rocket science. All right. So Mashuk's partner was doing sit-ups, and Mashuk was shouting, 1, 2, 3, up to 10, and then starting over like everyone else. 1, 2, 3, up to 10. Finally, at some point, around the seventh time counting, his partner yelled, "How many is that?" 4, answered Mashuk. "No, I don't mean how many in this set. I mean, how many sit-ups have I done?" Mashuk stared at the student through his beard, as if looking at a goat, and answered, "What do you mean?" So there you have it, folks. When someone says, "Mashuk was so dumb,"
"How dumb was he?"
The winning answer will be, "Mashuk was so dumb, he couldn't count to 50. One day, I came home from training, and Mashuk was sitting on the couch, alone, in the dark, filthy living room, staring at the wall. He'd obviously been there for hours. I walked in, and although I was no longer talking to him at that point, I couldn't help myself. "What the hell are you doing?" He often sat there like that for hours, but toward the end, I just couldn't take it anymore. It was too weird. "Mr. Antonio, tomorrow I have exam." I waited, but nothing came. I wasn't sure why he was telling me this, but I tried my best to sound genuine. "Okay, well, good luck. I hope that works out for you." "Exam," he repeated. "Yes, I hope your exam works out well. Good luck," I added, hoping that he'd heard that phrase, "good luck," because, you know, it does come up more frequently than kicking or Muay Thai. "Tomorrow." "Yes, yes, I heard you the first time, Mashuk. You have an exam tomorrow. Good luck." "I have exam." "Yes, you do." "I have an exam tomorrow." "I can't stand you," I blurted out, and I went to my room and locked the door. The next day, I came home and found Mashuk on the floor, surrounded with piles and piles of Malaysian coins. There had to have been a couple of $100 worth of change all spilled out and sticking to the filthy floor. I could see huge quantities of his hair and fish bones and things he'd eaten months ago stuck to the layers of filth covering the floor. Now he was sitting on the disgusting floor, moving the coins around to various piles. He looked up at me and just stared. I learned to read his various stares by that point, and this was his goat stare. A few days earlier, he told me that to extend his visa, something that was free for Americans, was going to cost him more than $1,000, and he wasn't sure if he could stay longer in Malaysia. At first, I thought he was counting his coins to see if he could come up with $1,000, but then I remembered him telling me that he'd had an exam. Now, I pieced it all together, and my heart soared. Mashuk was leaving Malaysia. Yay! Mashuk was still staring at me, but he kept fidgeting with his coins. "What are you doing, Mashuk?"
"Mr. Antonio, how to count?"
"How to count? How to count the coins? There are numbers written on the coins which tell you their value," I said. He looked down at the coins as if seeing them for the first time. He neither confirmed nor denied that they were indeed marked with numbers, corresponding to their monetary value. "Is that all the change you've accumulated since coming to Malaysia?" I asked, as if I were talking to a normal person. He answered with a blank stare. "Are those the coins that you have from your whole time in Malaysia?" I asked, toning down my vocabulary. Again, nothing. "Are you leaving and you want to cash in your coins?" I asked, as if I cared. "Yes," he repeated, but the inflection was neither a question nor a statement. I didn't know what it meant. "Look, just take all those coins to the bank. They'll change them for you," I suggested.
"Bank?"
"Yes, Malaysia is unique in that in Malaysia, banks are used for the storage of money, and they often engage in acts of finance, commerce, and exchange. Who knows what life is like in another culture? We all make assumptions, but for all I know, in his goat village, the bank is where you go for a haircut or for a toe amputation." He still didn't agree or disagree. I was really hungry. I'd just come from picking up takeout food from the restaurant on the first floor of the building. Goat meat with hummus and flatbread was about my favorite treat in Malaysia. The restaurant guys always remembered me. Again, I was only one of about 4 Caucasians living in the building, but they were always really nice to me. It hit me that they were from the same country as Mashuk, but they were normal. So it wasn't the whole country that was nuts, just my roommate. Boy, I had really won the lottery. "Why don't you take all that change down to the first floor to the restaurant from your country? They will change it for you."
"How to do?"
asked Mashuk. "Just scoop it all into a bag, wash it, and bring it down there." Michu continued staring, not saying yes or no. "Screw you," I finally shouted. "I hope someone intentionally hits a building with your plane tomorrow." I slammed the door and locked myself in my room. I was fighting a compulsion to push my bed against the door. The guy gave me the creeps. I listened through the door, but he didn't move again for hours. If it had been anyone else, I would have told him to count the money into 100 ringgit piles, so it would be easier for the restaurant guys to change it into bills for him. Then I remembered, Mashuk was so dumb.
How dumb was he?
He couldn't count to 50. I'm Antonio Grisefo, and that's it for this episode of the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to my podcast. I don't get anything if you do, but it makes me feel better. You can get all my books, as well as my latest book, Warrior Odyssey, at Amazon.com. Make sure to buy 10 copies for someone you love. Stay tuned, because there's a little more funny stuff coming after the announcements. You can follow me on Twitter.com, Brooklyn Monk, and see my videos on my YouTube channel, Brooklyn Monk 1. Also, you can subscribe to my newsletter or donate to the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund on my website, www.speakingadventure.com. You can also shoot me an email there at www.speakingadventure.com. Well, I'm so incredibly broke, I was considering wrestling alligators for money. But then I thought, alligators don't carry money. And besides, I might get into trouble with the animal rights people. But then it hit me, animal rights people carry money, and a lot of them are pacifists. So that might be a good target group for me to wrestle. So basically, let it be known, the gauntlet has been thrown. I will wrestle, for money, any small children, old people, the aged, the infirm, or pacifists. If you fit any of those descriptions and got a few bucks to spare, please come wrestle me for money. Or you can just donate through my PayPal account on my website. This is the Brooklyn Monk in Asia reminding you to go out and do something stupid today.